In Washington yesterday, Attorney General John Mitchell talked about the case of the Pentagon Papers and said that the Justice Department will prosecute all those who have violated federal criminal laws in connection with this matter. And one of those already indicted by a federal grand jury on charges of violating a section of the Espionage Act and for the alleged theft of government property is Dr. Daniel Ellsberg, an MIT research associate, who admits he gave the Pentagon Papers to the press. Dr. Ellsberg is at WBZ-TV, our Boston affiliate, for an interview now with Today Washington editor Bill Monroe. Gentlemen.
Thank you, Hugh. Dr. Ellsberg, there was a time lag of about 2 years from the time you apparently decided to make these papers public and the time they actually became public. Why that long a lag?
Well, obviously, I feel great regret that there was that lag. The actions that I took at that time didn't suffice to get the information either to the whole of Congress or to the public, and that's why ultimately I had to go further.
You gave the papers a couple of years ago, apparently, to Senator Fulbright. Did you expect him to do more with them than he did?
Well, I did hope that he would. I hoped that there would be hearings, and as a matter of fact, there were hearings, you may remember, scheduled for mid-October, which was the period we're talking about, mid-October 69. These were postponed because of the president's speech of November 3rd, ultimately postponed again and didn't really come back. I don't know all the reasons that hearings were postponed. I'd always felt that congressional hearings, whether closed or open initially, would be the most appropriate form to address the material in these papers, whether the papers themselves were addressed, and I thought that the senators should have these as backup information for them. As you know, there haven't really been hearings of the sort that were then contemplated up till now, and I'm very glad to hear that Senator Mansfield and others, Senator Symington, Senator Jackson, I think, and the Armed Services Committee as well, have talked about hearings. I think they're overdue, and I believe this material will be relevant.
Did your wife and children, by any chance, influence you about making these papers public? Did you talk to them about it?
I certainly did not want to involve my wife and children any more than friends in what obviously could expose them to actions against them, legal actions against them. I haven't been asked that question before, incidentally. I felt the same way about close friends of mine, people that I would have normally turned to for advice on this because I respect their opinion and yet had to deny them any inkling of what I was doing lest they be suspected of cooperating. But I did feel, of course, that I owed it to them to give them some general warning that since they depended on me, that problems were going to arise, that I was taking actions. They knew that I was acting against the war in various ways. I felt that I had to tell very early my children that some things might be happening to me that would be hard for them to understand, and I wanted them to know why I was doing it. So the as for my wife, we only got married in August 8th, and I had to tell her, of course, before I were married, that it could be, our time together could be short, but I did not want to tell her details of that, naturally, not to involve her.
I gather from what you said at a news conference yesterday that you still have some of the papers, that you have not released all of them to the newspaper.
No, that's a misconception of what I said. I do not have any copy of the papers, which I, as I said, I gave only to the Foreign Relations Committee, since I had no intention of giving them to the newspapers at any time. These are related to our negotiations and our negotiating channels. I had no need for to have them in my possession at any time after I gave them to the Foreign Relations Committee.
So certain papers that you regarded as particularly sensitive, you've never had in your possession except to give to the Foreign Relations Committee.
I really, one could exaggerate, I think, the sensitivity of those papers which deal with negotiations, but I did feel that other judgment was needed on that, that is certainly a serious judgment could say that that would jeopardize our negotiating channels, and that the senators, I thought, were better able to make that judgment than I was, or the newspapers, and course, it's implicit in what I've been doing that I felt the senators, the executive branch, the courts, the press, all together probably would bring better judgment to bear on the issue of secrecy than the executive branch had done over 20 years. I felt that their judgment, which had been weighted exclusively on the side of secrecy for 25 years, had clearly been shown by the studies themselves to have been inadequate.
Dr. Ellsberg, I believe Hugh has a question for you from New York.
Yes, a couple of them, Bill. Dr. Ellsberg, I'm wondering, is it possible that the government was unaware that you were not releasing certain sensitive papers, and that this might, in part at least, account for the nervousness about what might be printed in the newspapers?
I really don't know what the government was aware of on this in this respect. Of course, the New York Times protected not only their right to conceal sources under the First Amendment, but their right to hold on to their material and so forth. And so I don't know how much the government knew about it. I think they did have a list, which should have revealed to them that the New York Times, at least, did not have that material. I guess there was no way they could know that other papers would not have it.
The second question is, you have declined to mention who assisted you in the dissemination of this history, but could you say how many there were, particularly how many in a position that you were on the inside?
You know, as a person who worked in the national security system for 12 years, I'm not familiar with dealing with the press at all. I read the papers on the way over here this morning and found that I had made a misjudgment by even alluding to the fact that there were other people who made phone calls, which was a question raised, and did that sort of work when at a time when I was trying to maintain privacy. I can see right away that that raises the kind of mystery that attracts attention to them, which was, of course, not something I wanted to do. My own privacy for those 10 days, which my wife and I enjoyed very much, at the same time did give mystery that attracted attention to us and diverted it from the papers, where I hoped very much, the Pentagon papers, where I hoped it would stay. So I'm trying to feel my way as to how to keep attention off personalities here. And I obviously, in this case, the only way to do it is just not to comment on the other individuals. As I said yesterday, I don't want to make the decision for them. They're people that I respect, and they'll make their own decisions.
Dr. Ellsberg, some people feel that you betrayed a trust in releasing these documents, that you had access to them in the first place because by written pledge, or at least by implication, you were looked on as trustworthy and had agreed to keep them in confidence, but you broke that trust. Did that concern you? Did you have to wrestle with that before you made them public?
Well, I think the trust that most of those people are talking about are the secrecy regulations of the Department of Defense. And having read the content of these papers, I felt embarrassed would be too weak a word, perhaps ashamed, seriously, regretful, certainly, that I had, despite my obligations as a citizen, been as thoroughly reliable and dependable and loyal to those secrecy regulations as I had been all my career. Because that involved me, after all, in cooperating and concealing essential information from the American public. And something, I don't want to be melodramatic, a little beyond that. With all the general questions that are being raised about secrecy, I think a rather important one for the future has not been raised. That I've faced over the last few years. What should an official or a public servant, salary paid by the president, not by the president, that's an interesting slip and shows the reflexes that I've absorbed for 12 years along with everybody else, paid by the people, by the taxpayers, by the people who earn money, by the people who pay taxes of this country, who paid my salary my entire professional life. And a person like me who has sworn an oath to uphold the Constitution with its separation of powers, Congress, independent judiciary, and the press, as well as the executive branch, even though he happens to be immediately employed by the executive branch. What should such a person do when he comes across knowledge and perhaps documentary evidence that high officials have not only been concealing vital information from the public, but lying to the public, misleading them, concealing evidence not only of mistakes and failures, and that will always happen, but in this case, and we're talking now about a war, violations of the Constitution, violations of international agreement, violations of understandings, in effect evidence of high crimes. What should he do with that information?
Well, Dr. Ellsberg, people in government, including Secretary of State Rogers, have made the point that if every employee with access to these papers, and people have different consciences and different interpretations of these things, if every employee felt free at any point when he felt material should be made public, to make it public, the government would have difficulty in negotiations and that sort of thing. Would you concede that there is some difficulty presented here?
Could we separate that into several cases? First of all, with the incentives in the government that they can bring to bear on their employees to keep secrets, to keep silent even about deceptions and lies and perhaps crimes, there's no fear that a lot of secrets will manage to be kept in succeeding years as in the past. Those sanctions are not only loyalty to one's boss and loyalty to the executive branch, which people in that branch tend to equate with loyalty to the government or the Constitution. It's a distinction that disappears in one's mind when one works in the Pentagon or the State Department or the White House very long. But there are also incentives of keeping one's job, keeping one's access and influence within the system, which would be jeopardized immediately by any fear that you were talking to newspapermen, and by other incentives of various sorts. The chance of further government employment, further executive branch employment. All these things will press on people to enable them to keep secrets. The effect of those incentives we can measure by the fact that the enormous mass of secrets, and secrets is to some extent a euphemism. Secrets is a magic word that the government has given to facts of our own history, which have been deliberately concealed by the public. That gives them this aura of secrets. They're facts, they are lies. They're not quite as mysterious as the word secrets suggests. They've all been kept. They've been kept so long, it seems obvious that the system as it has been functioning has been functioning too well in terms of secrecy.
Do you feel fairly certain that the impact of these papers will be to shorten the war, to affect current and near future decisions on it?
I don't feel certain of anything. I certainly that's my hope. I hope that the effects of this disclosure, massive as it is, and unusual historically in its complexity and comprehensiveness, with all its limitations, that some benefits will flow from that as people study them over a matter of years, not just months. But certainly my immediate hope is that it will reveal to people how much current policy is reliving the mistakes of the past.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ellsberg. Dr. Daniel Ellsberg, the man who released the secret Pentagon papers. Now back to Hugh in New York.
Thank you, Dr. Ellsberg and Bill Monroe. 56 and a half after the hour now, and we have this message here. It's a word on how Kellogg's Special K cereal can help you stay in fashion. You know, with so many of today's fashions made of sheer knit or clinging fabrics, there's really no way of escaping the reality of unsightly excess weight. So start eating smart at every meal, starting with the Kellogg Special K breakfast. That's juice, Special K, cereal, skim milk, sugar, and coffee. And it all adds up to less than 240 calories. 99% fat-free, 100% delicious. Stay in fashion, the Special K breakfast. And here's a word on another good cereal from Kellogg's. Watch.
22 more seconds and it's you, Harry Wilson versus morning. With Kellogg's Corn Flakes waiting to help, it's the cereal for breakfast American style. It's fast when you're slow. It's cool and inviting, easy on your eyes and stomach. And Kellogg's Corn Flakes nourishes you too, Harry. It contains whole grain levels of the important nutrients, thiamine, niacin, riboflavin, and iron. Come on, Harry. Breakfast American style starts right here.
There we are. We're nearing the end of this hour and this week. No, we've got another hour here today, and then it'll be weekend time. On Monday, we'll have our regular view from Washington, which, as you know, NBC correspondents will discuss the major news coming out of our nation's capital then. An interview with writer Pearl Buck, the only American woman ever to be awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature. And also we have film highlights from the 1970 Women's World Championship softball game played in Osaka, Japan.
Don Porter, the executive secretary, will be talking to him about it. They're trying to make softball part of the Olympics.
It may become that. So we'll see you. We'll see you in a few seconds, and some of you will see Monday, and we'll take a station break now.
Live via satellite from London, see the Wimbledon Tennis Championships, Saturday afternoon at 12:30 Eastern, 11:30 Central, and 9:30 Pacific Time. Followed by Major League Baseball as the Pirates meet the Cubs. Then it's back to the tennis courts for Wimbledon highlights.